Do you feel like you're always rushing and you just can't slow down? Let's revisit a conversation that I had with Alan Fadling, who addressed that very situation, that very topic, that very subject. The benefit, the importance, the significance of slowing down. Everyone, I'm going to break away from my usual when it comes to spiritual perspectives, where I speak solo about a topic that has to do with biblical perspectives, because when I'm able to, I really love going about the business of sharing some perspectives, spiritual perspectives from guests. We have such a guest who's going to share a powerful, powerful perspective on leadership. Hello and welcome to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr., where you are in time to slow down. That's right. We would like for you to slow down. We're often in such a big hurry that we wear ourselves out trying to get things done. It's a good thing to want to get things done, but sometimes we could be so much more productive. We could get so much more done, as ironic as this may sound, if we would slow down. We have a tremendous guest who is joining us today to share with us how to do that, why and how to slow down. He is author of the book, An Unhurried Leader, The Lasting Fruit of Daily Influence. He is Mr. Alan Fadling. Alan, how are you doing?
I'm doing just great, Carl. Thanks for the invitation to be with you.
Truly my pleasure, and I appreciate you for joining us to talk about a very, very important topic, and that is slowing down. Slowing down. and I like the fact that what you share with us is truly good for anyone, for people in particular, but also for leaders even more specifically, and even more specifically than that, leaders in ministry. But before you begin to talk with us about that, tell us what life was like for you, Alan Fadling, as a child, as a teenager, as a young adult, generally telling us what life was like, but including within that, whether or not life was hurried for you when you were younger.
Well, that's a good question. You know, I'm in my 50s, so I grew up in the the 1960s, the 1970s, and I will tell you that I remember as a kid riding my bike all day long in our little Northern California neighborhood, and I didn't have an iPhone, and I didn't have a Nintendo, game unit, and we had a black and white TV at first, and maybe three channels, so there were a lot fewer options, and it was, even just sort of by nature, quite a bit less hurried.
Now, that is such an excellent point. The three networks that were on TV, and like you said at first, a black and white, and there was no remote control. You got ready to change the channel, you had to get out of the seat, walk over to the TV.
Yeah, the remote control was the littlest brother. That's who the remote control
That's
was.
Right. And you're right. I think that even if New Yorkers were to compare the way life is now, the way life was 30, 40 years ago, they'd say that it's more hurried now than it was then. It just seems like that's what life is doing now, just speeding up.
Yeah, there are a lot of factors that are doing that. I think, for example, back in the 60s and 70s, that's about when, some of the time-saving, technologies and devices were being developed, and the promise, of course, then was, oh my goodness, imagine if you can do a job that used to take you 2 hours, now you can get it done in 1 hour, maybe you can get it done in 40 minutes. Imagine all this free time you're going to have. And they predicted a future back then. They predicted the future like you and I are living now, where people would be working 20 hours a week, or people would be retiring at 38, or people would be taking every other year completely off with full pay. And I think they kind of miscalculated, don't you?
Yes, indeed. They did miscalculate, especially on the money end of it.
Yeah, oh my goodness.
And as it turns out, we we've developed a reputation in America for working more hours than most other developed countries, than many other developed countries.
Yeah, so it turns out if you can get a job that used to take 2 hours done in 40 minutes, maybe you can just do that job three times and get more money to spend on more things that you may or may not need, to see if maybe you can fill some kind of an empty spot inside of yourself that stuff will never fill. And it's a little bit of a trap.
Yeah, it is a little bit of a trap that entraps people of every class, too. I mean, it doesn't matter from the wealthiest all the way to the poorest. We can get ensnared by it.
Sure, true. Absolutely.
So one of the things that people do, of course, as you mentioned, they definitely miscalculate it. A lot of folks are working more hours for less money, working harder. You know, you mentioned 50s, 60s, 70s, where even in the 70s, it wasn't absolutely necessary that most households have both parents working in order for the family to live a decent quality of life. Now, that has become a must for many, many families. And on it goes.
Well, that's true.
And so we're working more. You know, we're working longer hours. We have more people in the family. I mean, we're at the point now where I guess this may have been something that they may not have seen 40 years ago, but a lot of the children in the household are working now to help make ends meet. Whether that has to do with, you know, helping to keep food on the table, whether it has to do with helping to pay for their college education. A lot of the kids are working now. And so, yes, I agree with you, Alan. They really miscalculated.
Big time. Well, I think you're right, you know. And so it just makes me think, you know, Jesus says some things. For example, he said some things about, you know, our lives not consisting in having more stuff. Of course, that's the paraphrased version, but, you know, but we live in a culture where we're told your life will be better if you have this or that or the other better stuff than the stuff you have already. And again, as you said, I think that can happen to us at every level of wealth or simplicity in terms of budgets. You know, when we think our lives are out there somewhere and getting that new whatever it is, even if it's a little something that doesn't cost very much, that puts pressure on our need to earn more, which puts pressure on our need to work more, which can put more pressure on us. And what if our lives actually don't? I just think of my opportunities to travel quite a bit, and I've had some opportunities to be in developing world countries where folks live very, very simply, sometimes really on the edge of having enough, and yet they seem to have joy, and they seem to have peace, and I watch that, and I think maybe they haven't bought the line that their lives consist in having more things. Maybe they've, and many of these folks would describe themselves as you know, followers of Jesus, and maybe they've discovered that there's a kind of life that's completely defined separate from the stuff that fills my wallet or my closet or my garage. And those things have a way of hurrying up my life. And you know, one little thing I'd love to say is there is a difference between being busy and being hurried. A lot of us are busy these days. Jesus had days when he was very, very busy. You know, morning to night, the crowds would come. They had need after need after need. There were many times when Jesus was busy, but you never got a sense that he was hurried, because busy is kind of a matter of calendar and to-do list. Hurried really is a matter of soul. What's happening inside of me? Am I rushing inside as I go through whatever day I have, whether it's a busy day or a relatively empty day?
That is such an excellent point. And when you mentioned that, I tell you what you brought to my mind. The many opportunities that Jesus had to say, well, no, I can't do that right now because I'm rushing to get to such and such a place. I just had a man tell me that his daughter's dying and I'm hurrying to get there right now. He never did that. Every opportunity that he had to be interrupted to minister, even when he was en route to ministry, he allowed himself to be interrupted. He wasn't so hurried that he couldn't take time to minister in the moment.
And so for me, that's where I think letting Jesus be the one who models for us what an unhurried life might look like would help us, so that we don't have to wrestle with, well, you know, am I trying to be this, you know, odd person in like a leisure situation? Am I being irresponsible? You know, am I not doing enough because now I'm, you know, whatever unhurried means? But so for me, unhurried is just one more word to describe the way Jesus lives and relates to people and does his work. And so that's what my life has been for a number of years now. It's been an experiment in looking at what would it be like if I were following an unhurried Savior and trying to walk with him at his pace. And so then I see the people coming across my path, including the ones who feel to me like an interruption, because I've got a plan. There's stuff in my calendar. There's stuff on my to-do list, and I don't have any extra space. And yet I think Henry Nouwen was the one who said that often the things that I've defined as interruptions were really divine opportunities. And when we're that kind of hurried, we can run right past beautiful opportunities to be a part of something God wants to do in my life and in the life of another that particular day.
At that particular day. Alan, if you would elaborate on something for us, because you really caught my attention. You're sharing with us, and I know that we were just getting started, but you're sharing with us some of the disadvantages of being hurried. And you mentioned that in some of the less developed countries that you visited, the people weren't hurrying as much. They didn't have as much materially, but they seemed to have so much more spiritually. I'm curious, very often when we hear Americans, and it may be this way in the West in general, but I got to be honest with you, I just haven't heard a lot of people from other Western countries talk about this. But in America, when people start talking, quoting Jesus as having said, "I came that they might have life and life more abundantly," they so often relate that word life to material possessions. But it sounds like from your experiences, people from other cultures, from other countries, particularly from less developed countries, may interpret that very differently.
Yeah, so I think it's a perfectly fair question to ask, what kind of abundance was Jesus thinking about? And I'm not trying to read his mind, but when I look at Jesus himself, at the simple way that he lives, when I watch what seemed to be abundant about his life, you wouldn't measure it in terms of what he possessed. What you tend to measure is he was a remarkably joyful person. He was an amazingly peaceful person. He was an immeasurably loving person. And those I think, are the kinds of abundances that Jesus was describing. You know, he says elsewhere that, you know, if you're thirsty, come to me, and if you trust me, it'll be as though rivers of living water will flow from within you. It's another image of abundance. And maybe that image of an overwhelming rush of the rivers of water, which in that little place in the Gospels, he says, by this Jesus meant the Spirit, which was going to be given. Well, maybe it's the fruit of the Spirit that is actually our truest, richest abundance. You know, what would it be like to live a life where I had deep and abiding peace, and a joy that bubbled up from inside instead of a joy that was only, or a happiness that was only available to me when things kind of went the way I wanted them to go, which you and I both know that doesn't happen all the time.
That's right.
And so that abundance of soul, rather than a far more fleeting abundance of, like I said earlier, the things that can fill my wallet or my closet or my garage, I've just found, you know, if Paul says, "I've learned how to be content, whether in plenty or in want," he's talking about a contentment that doesn't get measured by the stuff I possess.
That is so beautiful. Ladies and gentlemen, I really want you all to, and I really want to encourage you to go ahead and embrace what Alan just shared with us. Don't get upset about the thought that the abundance doesn't necessarily consist of what you possess materially. God said it doesn't consist of that. It is just what Alan just shared with us. Alan has his Master Divinity degree from Fuller Theological Seminary, and he's president and founder of Unhurried Living in California, or as the Beverly Hillbillies call it, California. He and I will be right back, so stay with us.